Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Welcome, Bronwyn. I appreciate your time today. If you can first just tell our listeners, just what it is that you do at your organization and maybe about your role.
With pleasure. Thank you for having me, Brianna. I am Bronwyn Spire. I'm the CEO and founder of Force Therapeutics, and we are a digital care management company that works to improve patient engagement and satisfaction with high-quality, clinically validated remote care. And we've been in business for 12 years. We work with leading systems, ASCs, and large orthopedic private practices around the United States. And we've treated over 600,000 patients to date. So that's a little bit about me and a little bit about our company.
Very awesome. Thank you. So for my first question, if you can just share maybe the issues with accessibility and health equity for musculoskeletal care today.
So there are multiple issues, and I'll just start with saying musculoskeletal care, for those that don't know, is the systems of the body that affect movement. And so one of the first primary issues with access for patients with MSK issues is actually physical. It's hard enough for people often to get to and from a clinic or a doctor's office for treatment. And then if you layer on top of that their issues, moving, which is, the nature of the problem, that really makes some of the physical barriers to care quite prescient. But additional access issues include financial barriers. So, the cost of transportation, the cost of lost work time or lost wages, the need to have childcare, for example, if somebody has to be at a treatment. And of course, there are still pretty significant co-pays, and many of the patients with these conditions are either uninsured or underinsured. So those are the financial barriers I see. And then there's also health literacy and language. And so as with all aspects of healthcare, many patients, I think it's more than one third of Americans, have low health literacy. And just to give some context there, the Health Resource and Services Administration defines that as the degree to which individuals can obtain, process, and understand basic health information in order to make the right appropriate health decisions for them. And so this is obviously something that affects patients with musculoskeletal conditions. At Force, a lot of our patients are over the age of 60, and so they have some issues with age or vision. And so really, that all impacts their ability to participate in their health decisions. And then further to that, fluency in English. So language issues. More than 13% of the American population speaks Spanish as a first language at home, and 8% of the population has limited proficiency in English. So those factors can all impact access to health care and health information.
Thank you. Now, can you address how, these accessibility issues and health inequity issues, how that ties into the new CMS CPT codes?
Yeah, so really what's happening is the CMS released a new kind of set of codes called Remote Therapeutic Monitoring Codes in 2022. And really, these are focused on musculoskeletal and respiratory conditions. And it really signals that CMS is acknowledging the utility and benefit of patient-reported non-physiological data that can be transmitted digitally from wherever they are, so their homes, their nursing facilities, wherever they may be. But I guess the main thing here is that CMS is saying that's okay, that's fine. That means that the patients are engaged, that they are actually receiving care, even though it's virtual, and really acknowledging that virtual care is care. And so, you know, as we think about the access issues, you know, especially rural or low-income patients, there are multiple barriers to in-person care and substantial costs, as we mentioned. So, you know, with just a relatively small copay for some of these patients, remote therapeutic monitoring codes enable them to still participate in health information that they need to improve their care. It enables them to be in communication with their care team without having to be there physically. And so it really helps open up their ability to get care from true providers, regardless of their access barriers.
But how does reimbursable care through these new codes, I guess, affect healthcare overall?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, a couple of things just to point out here is that, you know, in releasing these codes, CMS was very thoughtful about creating boundaries or minimal requirements, because we want to make sure that, you know, these patients are receiving care that has parity to in-person care. And so, you know, the RTM reimbursement codes require that both the patients and the providers have to meet specific criteria. And some of those require that the patients are actually actionable and accountable in their care. Is, you know, one of the stipulations, they have to report data for at least 16 days out of a month. And that the providers also have to be active. And so they have to actually, you know, maintain minimal standards of reviewing patients, you know, inputs. So that we're really thinking about not only improving access, but actually delivering a certain level of care, so that the patients are still getting appropriate and successful outcomes from their treatment. And so, you know, it's important not just to think about the codes themselves, but actually to think about, you know, what the outcome looks like. And so it's really important, as we think about virtual care being reimbursed, that the care delivers the outcomes that patients expect, and that those outcomes are being measured and delivered back to the care team. And so it really is, it's really has to be a true ecosystem of care. And all care, you know, should be predicated on delivering an outcome to the patients.
Now, we are focusing on, you know, underserved populations as well. So would this include maybe patients in like rural areas?
Absolutely. So, you know, the beauty of virtual care, and you know, in my humble opinion, especially, it should be a provider driven. So we want to make sure that the care is specific and personal for that patient's diagnosis and needs. It shouldn't just be a you know, open source YouTube video that they're getting care from. So, you know, with a well-constructed technology infrastructure and virtual care delivery system, rural patients actually stand to gain a lot, because they can access their own providers in a closed system and receive the care that they need based upon their own diagnosis. And this is a really important point, because, you know, a lot of times because patients were either rural or underinsured or underserved, that would result in a poor outcome. And so the opportunity that we have before us today is with truly, you know, well-designed provider-based digital care systems, rural patients can receive exactly the care they need from their own provider organization, regardless of their barriers to access that care in person. And we did a really interesting study at a large academic health system in the middle of Pennsylvania, where the average patient had a 45-minute commute to their closest care provider, and found that patients that were actually furthest away from their care provider were the most engaged in their digital care plan. So they were actually really needing to be, you know, connected. And so they really relied on the digital infrastructure that was provided by their health system to engage in their care. And they did really well. So their outcomes were really good because they could actually, for the first time, access the right care as opposed to having to travel in and all the barriers that can, you know, prevent that from happening in a scalable and a positive way.
Okay, thank you. Now, when you say remote care, I guess how close in relation would you say, like, compared to telehealth? And I'm tying this into because there's been a lot of reports recently saying, like, you know, more earlier in this year and so on, like, funding for telehealth is expected to decline. So I guess, can you kind of comment on that and what you think there?
So telehealth is just one kind of pillar of remote care. Telehealth, in my mind, speaks to the ability to, you know, connect in real time over a video conference. And that's good. And that is a very valuable piece of remote care. But it cannot be the only thing that we rely on because there is so much else that needs to be transmitted for patients to actually engage in their recovery at home. And so that one digital conversation is super important and valuable, but patients also need access to asynchronous types of health information. At Force, we deliver videos that patients can access anytime, 24/7, around, as an example, exercises that they should be doing, how to care for an incision if they had a surgery, how they could, how their walking should be at this stage of their recovery, how much they should be walking, how to avoid an infection. And so all of that information is kind of rounds out that remote care experience for patients, because similar to in-person care, it wouldn't be practical for patients to kind of live with their providers. And so with remote care, that digital touch point, that video conference, that telehealth visit is just one piece of the entire story. And so that's kind of how I think about contextualizing that telehealth visit.
Now, this also, I guess, we're tying to it, maybe more of your personal opinion, but I guess, what do you anticipate in the future with remote care, more specifically with this form of care?
Well, I think we're a little early on in the whole journey, but I do think that the trends have been established. And as CMS provides additional guidance surrounding the nuances of remote therapeutic monitoring, and as digital stakeholders develop more efficient monitoring and automation features, I think the benefits and the awareness of the benefits of remote therapeutic monitoring will spur uptake of remote therapeutic monitoring. So in my opinion, I think it's going to be important to closely monitor regulatory and payer developments around RTM And make sure that those boundaries and those regulations that are in place are strictly adhered to and are consistent with reimbursement. But I think overall it's pretty clear that remote care is the future and it's here to stay. And these new codes and this trend is certainly indicative of that. And so I think we can anticipate continued innovation in the digital health space, as well as, you know, rising acknowledgement of the benefits of digital and remote care as this reimbursement coverage improves and increases. And, you know, as with all kind of new, and you know, people will say this isn't that new because we had remote patient monitoring before that, but I think it's important to, you know, go in with a little bit of trepidation. I mean, CMS typically, you know, dips a toe and then examines the efficiency and the parameters of the codes that they've released. And then they sometimes pull back and they iterate. So ultimately, you know, this is just the beginning and I think we'll see where it lands. But the bottom line here is that remote and digital care are a fundamental aspect of orthopedic care provision and will continue to play an increasingly large role in ensuring that high quality care is available to the broader patient population, regardless of access, of their access issues.
That's great, Bronwyn. Thank you. Now, that's actually all I had for you, but is there anything that you'd like to address that maybe I did not ask or bring up in the conversation?
You know, Brianna, our system, the FORCE system is actually a digital environment that is allows connection between the patients and their own providers. And the beauty of that is that patients actually get to share very personal goals and anecdotes about what they hope to achieve with their care. You know, in the musculoskeletal realm, a lot of patients are unable to participate in the things that they love to do every day. They cannot, you know, sometimes they can't do the sports they want to do. They can't go to work the way they want to. Some people can't participate in social you know, family activities the way they want to. And so it just allows patients to express the importance and for providers to understand what patients are hoping to accomplish, and, you know, create some shared decision making in their care delivery. And so I think that's really important because care is something that is happening not in a vacuum and it's not one size fits all. And so it's really important that patients and providers are able to communicate in a closed, secure system, but in a way that feels very personal and unique to their needs.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.